Good afternoon, everybody. We'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:03 p.m. Monday, September 13th, 2021. Producing a quorum, we have with us Representative McKay, Representative Kronk, Representative Hopkins, Representative Rauscher, Representative Hannon, Representative Gillum, Representative Schrage, and myself, Representative Putkadup. Senator Fields should be joining us momentarily. I'd like you to officially welcome our first time having Robin here with us, our recording secretary, over to my right, and then Alex, the LIO moderator. And Grace is back in Juneau now, so. Today we'll be hearing Representative Tarr's bill, HB 3005. Our goal is to put it on the record while we're in special session so we can work on it in what is the remaining of the interim for the year before we get back into our regular session in January. That way we can further analyze it and develop questions, comments, and any possible amendments that the committee might have before we move it out. So with that, I'll pass it over to Representative Tarr and staffer Mr. Song for your the show is yours now. Forgive me, I'm a little rusty. It's been a while since we've done this.
Well, I'm smiling, but you can't see it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from House District 19 in Anchorage.
I'm David Song, staff to Representative Tarr.
And we really appreciate the opportunity to present this bill, and not a long presentation. I know the committee hasn't spent a lot of time on oil tax issues this year, and speaking of feeling rusty, this is something I was spending a lot of time on for several years, and so just kind of getting me back in the swing of things. So just try to give a little bit of an overview of what we're thinking about with this legislation and why, and then, of course, try to answer any questions. So the first slide here, just what's important for me is to sort of share the context of which I'm thinking about this legislation. Having worked on resource issues for the first 8 years of being in office serving on the Resources Committee, one of the things that was said over and over and a big takeaway for me was sort of the only constant when we're talking about oil taxes development is that change is the only constant. So the market's changing, the price is changing, the opportunities are changing, you know, whether that be geographic opportunities in, you know, even in Alaska or because of a new discovery elsewhere. So I tend to think of, and it's sort of foundational to why I'm presenting this piece of legislation, that we shouldn't think of the oil and gas world as a static environment, but instead should be thinking of it as a very dynamic environment where the circumstances in which we're doing things are always changing. And even for those of you on the committee, you know, if you're thinking just back to last year, we had this moment where oil didn't have a value temporarily, right? You know, and now we're at $70 a barrel. So just in the last, you know, little more than a year, we've seen that dramatic of fluctuation. When I first started on the committee in 2013, when we were writing Senate Bill 21, oil taxes were $100 a barrel, and $60 was considered the low price environment. You know, now we think that $60 is closer to the new normal, you know, and now that we've seen this bump and where we've hovered for the last few months about around $70 a barrel has, you know, been a price increase. So, you know, just for me kind of watching it over that period of time, you know, there's just been a lot of change. Again, thinking about new projects, new opportunities, you know, one thing that dramatically changed things was fracking and then the opportunities in the lower 48 relative to Alaska. We see what's happening with NPRA. So, again, you know, foundational to my thinking on this legislation is that the only constant is change. And I just wanted to start the presentation with reviewing how our oil tax system works. And I know I've sort of shared handouts about this and have talked about it a little bit before, but it was really important for me in understanding to really do a lot of the math myself. And when we worked on House Bill 111, I did modeling for that bill under dozens of different scenarios, prices, and it will help you once we start looking at these other scenarios understand what I saw in doing that work. So we're a net profits tax system, and so the idea with net profits is, right, you get to exclude your transportation costs, and then you get to exclude your allowable lease expenditures. There's both capital expenditures and operating expenditures. And so if you're looking at this chart, you see the $70 listed as the, you know, about the current price we're seeing for Alaska North Slope ANS per barrel price. I rounded up relative to the spring forecast book in terms of transportation. It's hovering around like 972 is what they have in the spring 21 revenue forecast. So rounded that up to $10 just for purposes of this explanation. So once you subtract the transportation cost, it's called the GVPP, the gross value at the point of production. Then you deduct your allowable lease expenditures. And for purposes of this example and the ones in here, I have combined the operating and capital lease expenditures. This $30 number, again, comes from the spring 2021 revenue forecast. So after you, you know, take the subtraction of the transportation costs, subtraction of the lease expenditures, you get what's called the PTV, or production tax value. That's your net profit. So you're not going to apply the tax until you've done those deductions. So that's the point at which you apply the 35% tax. So in this case, you know, you take your $30 times 35%, you get $10.50. And at current prices, the per barrel credit is $8. So then you subtract that, and your tax per net is $2.50 per barrel. The way our tax works is it's a higher of two options. It's the higher of the tax per net or the minimum tax. The way you calculate the minimum tax is you take 4% of the gross value at the point of production. So that's $60 times 4% gives you $2.40. So under the current spending and the current price, your tax per net at $2.50 is just that smidge higher than your minimum tax of $2.40. So right now you would be operating under the net tax at the $2.50 per barrel. Hopefully I haven't lost anyone yet. So if we go to the next slide and we just look at same price per barrel, $70. Okay, same transportation prices, $10. But then under our lease expenditures, you know, if the companies just start to spend a little bit more, and that number goes from $30 to $40, and we follow it all down to the end, you see what happens is that, you know, your tax ends up being $7, but when you apply the per barrel credit, you have a negative $1 value, and your minimum tax is $2.40. So in that case, you're going to default to the minimum tax because it's the higher of. Okay? Okay, if we look at scenario number two, these are two higher price scenarios. And I have two different columns here. One is a low spend scenario, one's a high spend scenario. So when I talk about low spend, I'm talking about your lease expenditures, right? So again, you know, these, the low spend, the $30 is what they're spending today. High spend, I put in $40. Which really isn't that high, because in the time that I've been working on oil prices and oil taxes, I've seen that number range from $20 to $60. And typically, you know, the higher price per barrel, the more investment there might be, right? Because that's going to be the time under which, you know, you think it's a more profitable scenario to do investment. But if you follow the math all the way down to the bottom, you know, if we were up at $80, right, in a low spend scenario, you'd be at the tax per net of $6. But at $80, under a higher spend scenario, we're going to default to the minimum tax, okay? Because your tax per net under that scenario is going to be $2.50 versus the minimum tax of $2.80. And all of these scenarios are done with the 4% current minimum tax. In scenario number three, we're looking at a lower price here of $60, right? Just a little bit lower than we are now. And here, again, I just stayed with lease expenditure prices of $30 and $40, 30 being your lower spend, 40 being your higher spend. And then if you see at the bottom here, what happens in both of these scenarios, you're going to default to the minimum tax, okay? Because in the low spend scenario, right, it's negative $1 for the tax per net, and in the higher spend scenario, it's negative $4.50 for the tax per net. So in both cases, you're going to default to the minimum tax. So if we just go back over these scenarios that we've looked at, we go back up, you know, under current, right, we might just be with these, you know, $30 spend at with $70 per barrel and $30 spend, you know, just above the minimum tax, but then go down, you know, in this next example, it defaults to the minimum tax, go down, you know, in one of these two, it defaults to the minimum tax, and then go down, and in both of these, it defaults to the minimum tax. So what I learned from working on this is that, you know, there's a lot of movement, again, in the way the tax works based on the price per barrel and then how much is being spent on the operating and capital expenditures. And for a while there, we were always defaulting into the minimum tax scenario because of the prices and the spending. What we typically see, and I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert or anything, but just, you know, having worked on this for a number of years now, what we've seen is that, you know, you're waiting for the prices to increase a little bit before you increase your spending, right? And that makes sense because you're not going to make additional investments that aren't profitable. But, for example, when we saw the big price decline in 2014 and then for that period after, you know, the companies also aren't able to make a dramatic change overnight, right? They can't lay down a rig or, you know, do massive layoffs immediately. So, you know, there's always sort of a lag on the spending, whether it's being reduced or increased relative to the price per barrel. So we've talked a lot about whether we need to revisit Senate Bill 21. I had the honor of working on House Bill 111 and working through that process and negotiating the end to the cash credit program. That's the one we keep talking about where we have about 750 or, you know, round up or down a little bit, $1 million liability. And that was a big piece of Senate Bill 21. You know, alternatively, or as another example, people have talked about making changes to the per barrel credit. You know, that's another piece of Senate Bill 21. And so I have just questioned, you know, whether if we want to make a change to our oil tax system, if we really want to do something sort of quickly, like making a change to the per barrel credit, knowing that given all this sort of fluctuation in price and spending, you could end up defaulting to the minimum tax and under a number of different scenarios, and that there's a lot of flexibility in that. And, you know, I didn't run all the different scenarios with different prices on the per barrel credit, but you can see, you know, if you want to plug in your own numbers, you can just see, though, with, you know, the price per barrel, the amount of spending, and then the per barrel credit, there's just a lot of flexibility there. And also, the thing about the per barrel credit is where it's go back up one for me, please, if you would. Thank you. You know, the per barrel credit is applied at the end, right, after you've taken out the transportation cost and the lease expenditures, and then applied the tax to it. So, you know, that's why the per barrel credit can be so sort of impactful to the math there. But again, just a lot of fluctuation. So if we go down and just think about what this bill does, you know, sort of when I've looked at our opportunities here, addressing the per barrel credit, or is there another opportunity? You know, when we wrote Senate Bill 21, like I said, oil prices were about $100 per barrel, and then $60 was considered the low price environment. You know, things are very different today. I can't speak for other people on that committee, but I can speak to the experience of being on that committee when the bill was written, and I don't know that we would have written the same tax system, you know, under this significantly lower environment. But when we worked on that bill, and also when we worked on Senate Bill 138, which was about the gas line, and when we worked on House Bill 111, each of those bills took dozens and dozens of hearings in all of the different committees, right, from resources to finance in this body, and then resources to finance in the other. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 40 or 50 hearings total. And so as we've been sort of trying to think about, you know, an overall fiscal plan and how to put one together, you know, I have just questioned whether our needs will be best met if we make a change to the per barrel credit right now without reevaluating the whole tax system. So what this bill does is it puts a pause button on all of the components of the tax system for 2 years. That is the longest time period with which we could do that before you have to make a change to the statute. And the idea here, and additionally, basically what it changes it to function from like a from the net tax to a gross tax. And it raises that minimum tax from 4% to 6%. So, you know, we would have some predictability about additional revenue, but it hits the pause button on the other parts of the bill for that 2 years. And the idea being that then the legislature would have 2 years to work together and, you know, do the sort of input, right, the necessary time. And, you know, perhaps I'm not as fast a learner as others or something, but, you know, when I think about the experiences I've had in these other circumstances, it was very valuable to have the time to really learn and work through. And, you know, like some of the more complicated bills that you see, you know, when we came to amendments, you know, I think we had like 56 amendments on Senate Bill 21 and, you know, many more amendments because there's just, you know, a lot to consider. So this, you know, pauses all of the provisions of the tax system for the 2 years. It raises the minimum tax from 4% to 6%. And, you know, in my mind, potentially provides a little bit more predictable of revenue because, again, you know, we can look at what the forecast is, but we know there's the potential for a lot of change. And I'm concerned that if we make a change to the per barrel tax credit right now, that in terms of the industry perspective, it would be like we made a change to the oil tax system and it would be difficult if it didn't produce the results that we had hoped for to come back and make an additional change because we shouldn't really be, you know, making changes on a yearly basis because that, you know, isn't good for investment, isn't sort of good for an investment environment. And so, you know, it's set up right now to default to the current tax after 2 years. And if we look at what that means in terms of the revenue estimates, big numbers day for us here.
Yeah, Representative Tarr, if at any point, I know that you're trying to give us the big picture whole idea of the bill, but I have seen some opportunity for questions to be asked.
There's
a good pause point, I think, after going through the three scenarios, that might be a good time to open up for questions.
Okay, sure.
Let the record reflect that Representative Fields joined us at 107. I know I saw Sarah, so we'll open it up to questions on our first handful of slides now. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I'm just, and again, maybe I'm being a little dense, and I haven't read 3005. With the phrasing of this bullet point at the top of what the bill does, pause all components, and I'm maybe just hung up on the semantics, but what you mean is you're going to, the bill proposes to suspend the current tax structure and for 2 years use a gross tax with a minimum at 6%.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, yes.
Okay. And then it sunsets at 2 years unless we'd taken some other action to permanently change it and reimposes it. It reinstitutes the current taxation structure.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, it would default back to what we have right now unless, you know, we made statute changes that made it something else.
Okay. So
follow up.
I am curious how that then, and again, I'm not an expert, haven't worked on this. You've referenced two things. Changing our tax system on an annual or biannual basis is problematic both for the state and the industry. Yet this seems to just set up to do that. And then it, one of the other bullet points is it minimizes an administrative burden. And it would seem to me that the administration of this one system now, and then we've got to restructure another, but it may only be for 2 years. So just help me understand how that meets that point of it's a minimal administrative burden, yet at the outset we're proposing this as a trial, which I think is a good idea, but.
Sure, thank you, through the chair to Representative Hannon. One is that we're going into it with this proposal so it would be known that it's for this temporary period of time. So in my mind, what we would be doing is giving ourselves the time to really evaluate if, for example, per barrel credit or other components of the tax system were what we wanted for a long-term change. And because we would be letting folks know that it's temporary in nature, you know, that would be different than trying to make a change now and then it not having the intended outcome that we wanted and then having to come back and try to make another change. And so this, you know, sort of just presenting it in the way that people know it's a temporary change makes that different. And then the second point, in terms of the administrative burden, if people have heard people talk about the audits that are necessary, the reason the audits are such a big deal is it's on the lease expenditure piece of it, and that is part of the net system. And so that's the part where they have to go back through and verify all the costs, and that's the part that's really administratively heavy. So under this scenario, if you function as a gross tax, you know, you're applying the tax on the gross value at the point of production, so it removes all of the work of doing the audits on the spending. And so that's what I mean in terms of reducing the administrative burden.
Mr. Chairman, one follow-up.
Follow-up.
Could I phrase, because my underlying concern had been that the two-year sunset didn't match with the two-year taxation period, because it always seems to me when revenue presents, there's a substantial lag between the year you're producing the oil and the year we're collecting the money from it, mm-hmm. and that our two-year suspension would be behind, you know, that the gas being produced in 2021, we don't know the tax on it till 2022, but it would sunset in 2023, so we really haven't had a two-year window to look at it. But you just described, and I think it answers it, that if we're going to gross production tax, that step of the delay de facto goes away, that time lag.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, it's really the delay is more on the substantiating the costs. The strange thing for working on taxes, and the other thing you might be thinking of, is typically we sync up any tax changes to be on a calendar year, because that's how the companies do their taxes. But then we have the fiscal year, and so that's typically why there's like a little bit of lag. And when we're looking at information, is that, you know, they're doing something on the calendar year and we're doing it on the fiscal year, but they're making their payments more regularly than that. And then it's the auditing that takes so much time afterwards. So it's the true up then that becomes a problem if there's any issues with the audit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hunter, Representative Torr. Representative Rauscher.
thank you, Chair Buck. I guess what I see here is that we're taking into account that this is going to basically affect oil companies when the oil prices are low, and that's kind of when they're, to me, that's kind of when they're running at a loss, and it affects the oil companies to a point to where we're always saying that we want to stabilize the industry. At least I am. I always hear that from the industry, but yet now we're going to put something in there that is not actually stable itself, as a representative to my right here was talking about. It actually starts something that will sunset again, possibly, and then it just seems like we're destabilizing. And it's very hard when you're trying to run a business which is in multi-million dollar figures and multi-million dollar profits and losses, facets, that you're throwing this out into a business that's trying to survive in a low price market. And so I'm just wondering, have you done an analysis at all on maybe the current market and how this may be germane to the oil and gas markets we have here in Alaska today, and what the outlook on that is at all?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Rauscher. A couple things. Yes, the companies may not be wild about the idea of the minimum tax. Even outside of this, they don't always like it because, you know, the idea with net profits is that you're only paying the tax when you have a profit. So if the prices go very low, it is true that you know, you saw in some of those circumstances where the net system gives you a negative number, but it always defaults to the minimum tax. But that's under the current scenario. So that's under the current scenario, whether, you know, we adopt this bill or not, that could be a concern for the companies. That's a fair consideration. When we looked at this, we have the revenue forecast book to look at. And so if you look at line number 3 for the spring 2021 forecast, you know, we can look out into 2023, 2024, 2025, again, knowing that there could be the potential for a lot of change. But I looked at those forecast numbers, and, you know, the forecast that they're saying right now, you know, gives us those numbers in that low 60s range. So, you know, if the forecast showed, you know, that we were thinking prices might dip to, say, $30 or $20 a barrel, you know, this would become a much different conversation and consideration. And I hadn't gotten to the slide yet, but, you know, another piece of this is that it's considered a piece of an overall fiscal plan. And I'll get to that and sort of explain how it fits into that, like, sort of bigger picture. But this is, you know, what we used as in terms of trying to understand, you know, what price scenario we might be operating in, and to make sure that it wouldn't be significant impact. The original version of Senate Bill 21 actually had, I think, a 10% minimum tax in it. That was reduced down to the 4%. You know, so a lot of these conversations have happened in the past about what happens in these lower price environments. And I would say that speaks to the need for a fiscal plan, because what it does is really challenges us, because we've been so reliant on the revenue from this one source that we can't afford to have a circumstance in which there's no revenue coming in, because it's the only revenue we have coming in. And so, you know, having that floor has basically been sort of essential to that. You know, we have had conversations, though, about whether we would rather have a net profits tax or a gross tax. And I don't feel like that conversation was really fully resolved in terms of what works better. And that's why, you know, I say, you know, this idea that sort of is intended to be a revenue generating measure as part of an overall fiscal plan, but also with this 2-year window, because it concerns me to make a substantial change that you're relying on as part of a fiscal plan where it maybe doesn't perform in the way that you were hoping it would. And, you know, what does that do to the other pieces? For example, if it includes constitutional amendment on the dividend or something else, right? So you're like locking in other pieces that rely on this other revenue, and then their potential exists for that revenue to not come in. Does that help?
Through the chair.
Representative
Thank you very much. And I guess I'm just I just worry. The industry right now is having problems finding investors, and their basic problem is that stability. And I guess if you laid out a plan that was going to move forward from now on, but if you laid out a plan that may change in 2 more years, just creates more instability. That's all. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Rocher. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tarr, for bringing this forward to kick off this discussion as we look at the long-term fiscal plan and seeing all the different options on the table. We had a presentation in this committee a few years ago in the previous legislature from an oil economist who came from the industry talking about investment and stability and what oil tax structures look like. And I remember him saying, I believe it was Rich Ruggiero was his name, and I believe he was saying that the current place at that time in the world that was receiving the most investment from oil development was in the North Sea off the coast of Europe, or off the coast of England, excuse me. And they had actually had, at that time, the most changes in their oil tax system. Mm-hmm. But what they would do was they had the ability to work with their parliament and their tax regime to change it, tweak it this way and that way based on oil prices. So when it mm-hmm. went up, the producers and the government there would work together. Mm-hmm. And so they had a lot of changes and a lot of instability, but also stability, understanding that that was there. Obviously, you're nodding your head. You remember that discussion that we had as well, and that was certainly eye-opening to me. Mm-hmm. That it's not necessarily just the change in the structure, but knowing what it's going to look like going forward. Mm-hmm. And I could not agree with you more that we continue to write oil tax systems for ourselves that are based in the world that we're living in and the prices we're living in, not what the future might hold, and not a resilient and uncomplicated system, because we wrote ACEs when oil prices were not $100, $120, and it goes up, and we're taking an incredible amount of government take at those prices. and we could have tweaked it at the top, but then we wrote SB 21 at $100 a barrel and didn't look at what happens if it goes negative or it goes way down and we see a drop. So I appreciate the pause for the ability to look at where we could go and what could be a more resilient, simple system. In that same past legislature, when we were dealing with the trying to understand the oil tax system that we have in SB 21, there was a V in the graph that Department of Revenue provided us, where we received the lowest amount of tax per barrel at about $65 per barrel. Do you remember that as well? It was right where you miss the minimum tax and you miss the per barrel tax credit shift and things like that. It was unfortunately right about where Department of Revenue has their projections for the next 5 to 6 years. So looking at how we might be able to avoid that is certainly a good idea. And did you take into account any of those specific price demands in your structure as we look going forward? Or are you just looking for a pause and a simple system that everybody could understand, the auditors could catch up with?
Through the chair to Representative Hopkins, on the first part of your introduction to that question, yes, I remember with Rich Ruggiero, and I mean, I think, again, I would consider that sort of like an unfinished conversation, right? It's and that's, I would say, you know, why I'm concerned if, you know, we do something and then it's considered like, okay, we made a significant change to the oil tax system and we're moving on, we're not going to do something, and it doesn't produce the results that people intended or thought it would, and then there's the temptation to come back and try and make another change, and, you know, it just gets difficult to like achieve that and then have it be positive, I think, in terms of like the investment in our state and just it's kind of like the dividend. When we've had oil tax bills, sometimes they sort of take over the legislature because it's been such an important part of our economy. So, you know, maybe that, I think that's, you know, really why I operate from this place of caution of, you know, wanting to be sure we know what we're doing when we do it so that we have the outcome and we can, you know, more reliably think that that's going to produce the revenue that we thought it would, whether it's more or less, you know, because in some circumstances, you know, there's been recommendations that, right, you should reduce on lower prices, and then, you know, that's that idea of progressivity on the higher prices. So there's like so many sort of tools in the toolbox, if you will, and it's just really about us deciding which ones are the best ones to use. On this, in terms of sort of looking at the price point, I'm not sure I exactly followed your question, but, you know, what we were looking at is, you know, basically in those scenarios, okay, if we're going to change the per barrel credit, you know, what are all the times where it might default to the minimum tax anyhow, based on the price and how much is spending? Now, again, those all showed the $8 per barrel credit. So, you know, if you reduce to, you know, 765, but then you also have to do it under the window of price that you're looking at. And right now it's linked to the price, the gross value at the point of production. So it's just more to illustrate that there's ways that, you know, you increase the spending when the price goes higher, but it doesn't produce more in terms of the net tax to the state because the way the system works, you know, it ends up defaulting to the minimum tax. And the only reason I even came across this was when we did House Bill 111, I thought the easiest thing to change would be the per barrel credit. And then I did all this modeling at all these different prices and all these different scenarios, and it was like, shoot, this doesn't actually produce the results I thought it was going to, because, you know, the per barrel credit gets applied at the end of the equation when you've already deducted transportation, lease expenditures, and then applied the tax. Then you do the per barrel credit. So, you know, it just had a different influence than I thought it did until I started running all those numbers. And so that's why, you know, when I look at it, for example, there's a fiscal note for the bill that is the change from the $8 to $4. And so, you know, it's saying $174 million for FY 2023, $294, you know, for FY 24, you know, $460 for FY 25. So, you know, if I look at that and I think, okay, well, that's what we're going to be bringing in, and then that's a part of an overall fiscal plan, but then it doesn't work out that way, you know, that really put some strain on what we thought was a fiscal plan. And, you know, I have concerns that there's just ways that that could happen. And so, you know, do we want to be thoughtful about that? And, you know, be able to just kind of consider that before we make that change. Maybe that is still the best policy alternative. It's just for me, having run these different scenarios, I just, you know that there's opportunity for that to change. And I would just suspect if some of these big projects come online like Willow, you know, that you might see an increase in spending. I don't know, and I didn't bring it up, but I would recommend if folks look at the NPRA spending, you know, with some of these new projects, and this is also because of carry forward losses, you know, there's a number of years where there's no revenue to the state. So I guess they just have learned enough to feel a little bit concerned, but just wanted to think about, and I guess if we go back to the slides, or go down, please, and go down one, let's see, go down one more. This idea, you know, this is just, again, one fiscal plan that had been put out there. I mean, really, the reason I put this out there in June was because the district that I represent tends to favor an income tax over a sales tax, but having not seen any movement on the income tax, was getting concerned that we needed to consider another, you know, sort of foundational revenue measure that would be a broad-based tax measure. And so, you know, I was trying to put together a plan that was wrapped around a sales tax. And when thinking about, you know, not to get too off topic here from this particular bill, but just sort of thinking about, okay, what are priorities of different groups of people and, you know, things that have been expressed in conversation. You know, this particular idea has the 50-50 of the dividend split, has the constitutional amendment that does the 5% POMV and the guarantee of the dividend. And so, you know, I was thinking, okay, I know some people, you know, haven't felt as comfortable on that, you know, and then what are some revenue measures that might give people more comfort? So it's really part of that plan that, you know, sort of tries to pick at pieces. Like I say, I know some people have preferred income taxes or oil taxes. You know, other people would be more comfortable with a sales tax, you know, on the dividend. So trying to kind of pick pieces that, you know, certain people may like this piece of it better than this other piece. You know, if we do the 50-50 and that's, you know, something that some people like better than others, you know, would they be open to considering changes to the oil tax system as part of a compromise? Can we go back up to the revenue one, please? So just looking at the revenue estimates for this one, and again, this is the data from the spring 2021 forecast in terms of the taxable barrels per day and the gross value at the point of production. And so just to show you the difference, and in this case, you know, this is more because it would change it to function from a, you know, net profits to a gross tax. So you can compare the 4% to the 6% and have real numbers. So it's in the $150 million range. So relative to, you know, that other bill, it might be a little bit less revenue if it's, you know, like for FY23, this other bill that says the per barrel credit change from 8 to 4 would be $174 million. This is $158. But if, for example, the spending changes or, you know, something if that, you know, if something changes in that scenario, the potential exists for that number to be different too. So it's really a question for us of sort of, you know, the policy call. I think it's fair to question, you know, again, like how often do we want to make changes? You know, why I like this idea was giving us time to fully evaluate a significant change because, you know, foundational to Senate Bill 21 was the cash credit program and the per barrel credit. So, like, we've gotten rid of the cash credit program. If we make changes to the per barrel credit, like, at what point are you sort of taking away the pieces of the foundation so much that you should really reconsider the whole? And then, you know, giving you enough time to do that. I tend to like to be very thoughtful about changes and, you know, really study and learn and hear from people. So it would give you that 2-year window to do this. This is a little more understandable in terms of, you know, where you're making the change. Go to the next slide, please. So options, you know, as it's done here, you know, it defaults to Senate Bill 21. You know, you would have the option. You could also have it default to the gross tax. You could also adjust to a higher minimum tax. At one point, I had a bill that changed the minimum tax from 4% to 7%. And so that was a little bit more aggressive. You know, you can see how to do the math, though, in terms of if you wanted to evaluate any of those options. And then what's missing from this is I need to add a provision for non-producers. So, you know, of course, the net tax only applies when you're a producer. And what the system we have set up when we negotiated the end of the cashable credits was to allow for carry forward losses. And this is just a mistake on my part. So we need to add back that provision. So one way you could delineate it was like have this provision apply to those who produce 10,000 barrels per day. So it would, you know, be for your taxpayers. And then the other provisions would apply to the folks who are in development, that sort of investment phase. And so we've talked a little bit about it being a part of the 7-part fiscal plan. And so I'll just close, and we've talked about these concepts previously, but you know, my thinking is just that we want to do it right and don't want to have any unintended consequences so that both the industry and the state can have stability. And that is all I have for your consideration, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tarr, for the good overview of House Bill 3005. Did that answer your question, yeah. Representative Hopkins? Any other questions we've got, Representative Rauscher?
Thank you. Representative, through the chair, Representative Tarr, I was wondering what kind of impacts would this bill have for, say, new development like the Pika Fields or something like that that's trying to come on board here?
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Rauscher. If we separate, you know, the sort of application of this to taxpayer versus non-taxpayers, we need to think about sort of what company is involved. And so if you're not currently a producer in Alaska, like Oil Search investing there, then you would want to make sure that they retain the ability to have the carry forward losses. And that's what we put in place when we did away with the cash credit program. And that's the error on my part that's missing from the bill. And then what would happen is, you know, when they become taxpayers, they transition from development to production, then those carry forward losses are used against any tax liability. So for those folks, we would want to, you know, be careful to retain that opportunity. Say we're talking about ConocoPhillips and the Willow project, then, you know, we would want to hear from them in terms of, you know, any tax increase, how that impacts their investment decisions. That, you know, that is like sort of the general conversation, regardless of whether it's the per barrel credit change or this change. You know, then that's, we would want to hear the response from them about, you know, how impactful that would be. And I'm sure they have something to say about that, right? I wouldn't want to speak on their behalf. But I do think it's important for us just to, yeah, kind of be thinking about like long term, because those projects take a long time to bring online and hear more.
And follow up,
Representative Rauscher.
And I guess I have a question on whether, correct me if I'm wrong, the proposed sales tax raises industry tax, since it includes services, and is that true?
Through the chair to Representative Rauscher, it's a sales and use tax, and so to the extent that businesses participate in, you know, purchases and then the use part of it, yes, it would apply to them. I don't have from the Department of Revenue sort of a proportional breakdown on that, and that's something I'm hoping to get in terms of, you know, how they estimate it over the $300 million that's expected to be raised from that. I don't have a proportional breakdown, and I think that is something hopefully I can get from them. And in fact, we're trying to set up a meeting with Department of Revenue to ask some of these very questions.
And a final follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Rose.
So you do plan on doing an analysis of some sort then, don't you? Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I appreciate all the work you've done here.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. And welcome, Representative McCade. Representative Fields?
Thanks, Chairman Puckettuck. Through the chair, seems like the main goal of raising revenue here is ultimately there's some interest in paying a larger dividend. as I was doing the math, is this about $250 per person if you were to use all the additional revenue for a dividend?
Through the chair to Representative Fields, I did not do it on a per person, but I'm sure we could do that right now.
Okay. I just like to do that because, you know, if that is the goal, and I realize that it's not everyone's goal, but if that's the goal, I think it's just good for the public to understand, you know, how much you actually increase a dividend check with a given amount of taxation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields.
And through the chair to Representative Rauscher, on your point, I will absolutely share that information if we can get some more of that information in terms of the proportional breakdown and how to think about that collectively. I know when Department of Revenue did the presentation in Ways and Means, they had some other proposals like property taxes, and you know that would be another one that, for example, might be a hit to the industry if it was implemented in term and in addition to a change to the production tax.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions, Representative Crone?
I appreciate the information here. I'm just kind of hesitant with the attack, you know, on from the federal administration on any of our resource development in Alaska. The hesitancy of investment in the next 2 years by the oil companies, not knowing what's going to happen after these 2 years. So I'd be real hesitant to put a damper on any sort of investment, you know, if they're thinking, okay, we're just going to pause this for 2 years, and we don't know what the certainty is after 2 years. So that would be a real concern of mine. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Crump. Any other questions from the committee? All right. Well, I think over the next few months and going into the next session, as far as revenue measures moving forward to try to put a dent in what our fiscal plan is, being able to look at the different effects that, whether it's the sales tax that might have an effect, or HB 130 or HB 104, what kind of revenue that's projected to pull in, and being able to look at a holistic view of even what the corporate tax structure looks like and how it affects the oil industry, and also the royalty side of it, getting a 30,000 foot view of all the things that are at play when we go to make a little change like this. Some might call it bigger than little, but it's a 10-page slide, so I'm looking forward to furthering that discussion and being able to get other modeling put together so that we can look at all the different options that we have on the table. So any other questions or closing comments from the committee members? Seeing or hearing none, if you'd like to have a closing remark, you're more than welcome to, Representative Tarr.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the opportunity to present this. And to Representative Fields, yeah, I think about 238 is what I get with the math per person. And I guess the piece I didn't say, as I was just sort of thinking in my head here, is, you know, with the per barrel credit, that was also linked to the 35% tax rate. And so, again, for me, just sort of the question of how many pieces of the underlying structure do you peel away before you want to evaluate the whole structure? And again, that's the policy call on all of these things are a policy call for us. You know, what kind of environment do we want to create for investment? Representative Kronk, I think very fair comments about, you know, some uncertainty. And so, you know, hopefully as a committee, you all will be able to hear back from industry folks and get their response to these different proposals and what they're thinking. And, you know, I try to just present them sort of, you know, in fairness from sort of both points of view of why, you know, like Representative Rauscher, what if they're not making a lot of money or if the prices drop, you know, that's a concern that's been brought to us. So try to, you know, be as transparent as possible about sort of pros and cons. And again, for me, just trying to look at different priorities of the different groups of people and, you know, how do we ever coalesce around something that, you know, gets us a more stable fiscal plan and frankly sort of diversifies so that we've learned from being so reliant on revenue from the oil industry that you know can have its downsides, right, when there's significant changes. Similarly, if we, you know, transition to being much more reliant just on the permanent fund, you know, thankfully it's right now under a 5-year rolling average, so there's some built-in protection there, but you know, you could have a couple bad years and then, you know, that could then translate to, even if it was $10 million difference, we've had such a difficult time finding additional cuts in our budget. So I think overall, the value of us having a fiscal plan will be to diversify our revenue stream and protect us a little bit and cushion us from any one change, whether it be industry opportunities or other. And I just present this as one way to, you know, kind of consider how we might get there. So again, thank you so much for the time and opportunity, and thank you for letting me do this.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. We don't have any further scheduled hearings this special session, but like I said, we're looking to coordinate with the administration and the affected departments, and also our industry partners, as far as having the discussion on what something like this would do from the holistic point of view. So we'll be in touch with any potential interim meetings, or we're picking it back up in January when we get down here in the winter. So with that, I think we've got floor sometime this afternoon. So we'll adjourn the Resources Committee meeting at 1:53 p.m. Thank you, Representative Tarr.